Okay, so we're just recovering from celebrating Shavuos, where the centerpiece, of course, of the celebration is that it's Man Matan Torah Seinu, when we read Aseres HaDibros, and one of the Lavin, one of the negative commandments in the Aseres HaDibros is Lo Tirtzach, that you're not allowed to murder. So I wanted to speak a little bit about the parameters of when there might be some sort of a question as to whether you can commit acts that could lead to somebody's death, and what do we do in situations where somebody's going to die for sure and you have to make a decision about who's going to live and who's going to die. And specific model that I wanted to choose to have this discussion is the model of the shipwreck cases. What are the shipwreck cases? Well, there are a number of cases that have arisen in history where there were ships that were sinking at sea, and in order to save a certain amount of the population, it was necessary to throw some people overboard, and a determination needed to be made who should be thrown overboard, and then if somebody or a few people would be thrown overboard, the ship would be saved and everybody else would be rescued. Is it ever permissible to throw people overboard? There is a separate consideration as well. Even if you're not going to throw anybody overboard, if you only have, say, a few life-saving boats that are in the river, and only a few people can be put into the boats, so how do you make a decision as to who should be put into the boats? Do you put nobody in the boats? Do you make some sort of a determination that there's a priority that some people should have over other people? And then there's the question that arises with respect to an individual who has to decide whether to save his own skin. That does a person have a right to take measures to bring himself to safety, even if as a result somebody else is not going to benefit and is surely going to die? So there, I guess, really are three different gradations in which this question can be discussed. One is in terms of a person himself, making a determination as to whether he has the right to save himself, even though others are going to die. Say there's only one space left in a boat that's a small life-saving boat that can take one person from a ship that's going down. Does the person have the right to take that space, even though it means that other people will not have that space and will therefore die? Second is, if you're the captain of the boat and you have to try to save as many people as possible, do you have the right to make some sort of a determination to throw certain people overboard? And the third is that if you're the captain of the boat or some other person in charge of deciding who's going to be saved, even if you're not going to throw anybody overboard, is there some sort of a priority system that we have, al pi halacha, in terms of deciding who goes first in being saved? So there are three useful cases that serve as a backdrop for this discussion that occurred in, I guess you can call it, legal literature in the United States and in Great Britain. The first was a United States case in the 1840s, in 1842. It was called United States versus Holmes. What happened in that case was that a boat, this is way before the Titanic, a boat hit an iceberg, and it was about to sink, and there was no way of saving the boat, but there were a certain number of lifeboats, and a decision had to be made as to who would be placed into the lifeboat. So there was one of the seamen, I don't know if he was a first mate or second mate, some personality by the name of Holmes, was the person who took upon himself the decision-making process of who would be put onto the lifeboats, and made a decision that was very questionable. Instead of following the principle of the captain and, I guess, all of the sailors going down with the ship, made the determination that the passengers should go down with the ship and the captain and the sailors should be saved, and put a lot of the sailors onto the lifeboats. A few of the passengers, mostly women and maybe a couple of married men, and and everybody else. There were about 35 people who were left on ship, so they all were left to drown. That was decision number one. And then he was on one of the lifeboats, and it became clear that that lifeboat would not be able to sustain all of the people without sinking eventually, so he made a decision that approximately 15 people had to be thrown overboard. I think the decision was mostly made to throw single men overboard who didn't have families. It seems that a couple of them did have families, but maybe the wives weren't around, and therefore they were deemed to be more expendable. And Holmes, despite the protestations of many of the people who viewed themselves as his good friends, and they pleaded with him for their lives, but he said, no, I'm sorry, I love you very much, but I have to throw you into the sea. And he threw about 15, 16 people into the sea. And everybody else survived. It was kind of a little bit unfortunate because it turned out that maybe it wasn't so necessary to throw so many people overboard. It was the very next day there was a larger sailing vessel that came along and discovered the little lifeboat and saved everybody else. And in all probability, he probably could have kept, you know, everybody else on the boat and they would have survived for another day. But, you know, he just it was hard to anticipate exactly how much longer they would have been able to survive. So then he was brought to trial in a federal court in Pennsylvania. This is in the early 1840s, and was tried for murder. And the defense was necessity, that the law of the sea demanded that these very difficult emergency situations be made. And under the circumstances, perhaps it could be justified to throw some people overboard, kill some people in order to save everybody else. And the court concluded that although in those circumstances it may in fact be appropriate to have some sort of a triage, the triage that was adopted was not really the appropriate one, because all of the sea people, all of the sailors, were saved before the passengers. And the chivalrous law at sea is that you have to first put yourself out for the passengers before saving the sailors. So he hadn't really acted appropriately, and he was sentenced for not really apparently such a terrible sentence, because the people were very sympathetic to him, and he was sentenced to something like 6 months of jail and $20 fine for throwing so many people overboard and not following the right system of triage. And the court basically indicated that the appropriate policy that should have been followed, the appropriate system that should have been utilized, would be a lottery system. That they should have taken, they should have been matil goalot, like they did in the times of Yonah, when his vessel was going down, right, to Yonah Hanavi. So they drew a raffle, so they should have drawn a lottery to determine who should be thrown overboard. But the basic proposition that it was okay to throw some people overboard was not necessarily challenged by the court. Then there was a lot of public sentiment in favor of this poor, you know, fellow Holmes, who was just doing his best under trying circumstances, and they petitioned to President John Tyler at the time to commute the sentence. But Tyler, I guess, had other things going on in his life, like an impending civil war, and didn't quite get around to the petition. But it didn't really matter so much, because within a few months Holmes was freed anyway. So that was the 1840s case. Then there was an 1880 case or so, in the early 1880s in England, where there was a boat that was headed from Southampton to Sydney, Australia. And there were four people on board. There was a fellow named Dudley, another fellow named Stevens, another fellow named Brooks, and then there was a young boy, a lad by the name Parker. And that boat also was very clumsily constructed. And the boat sprung a leak or something like that, and it was clear that they had to abandon the ship. There was a terrible storm, and the boat just wasn't going to make it. So they climbed onto a smaller vessel, but they ran out of food. So the question there wasn't that the boat was going to sink, but just that they were starving because they ran out of food. And it was a question of who to kill to eat. Because they needed food, and clearly human beings are edible to some degree. And after they despaired from being able to have other nourishment, they found the sea turtle, they ate the sea turtle, but then they ran out of that food, and the water was not fresh water, so they couldn't survive with the water either. So they proposed drawing lots in order, Dudley and Stevens proposed drawing lots. I think the other fellow didn't quite like the idea of drawing lots. In the end, they didn't draw lots, but they figured that since the teenage boy was the weakest and least useful on the boat, they would just kill him. So Dudley and Stevens decided to kill the boy and eat him, so they ate him. And also there as well, within several days, they were rescued by some other vessel, and the question was, whether what they had committed was punishable, whether it was whether it was unjustifiable murder. And there was a very robust case in the English courts with arguments back and forth. Public sentiment was highly in favor of Dudley and Stevens, but Dudley and Stevens were ultimately convicted of murder and they were sentenced to death. But ultimately, public sentiment prevailed, and their sentence also was commuted to something like 6 months. There was no suggestion in that case that it would have been justifiable to kill anybody, even if they had drawn lots. That was considered to be a little bit more obscene in terms of the way that that it played out. But it is interesting that public sentiment was largely in their favor. Go figure. And it was also interesting, the fellow that they killed was a young lad, I think his name was Richard Parker, and there had been some sort of an Edgar Allan Poe story that had been published maybe 50 years earlier in which he had contemplated a case where there was a ship going down and they had to draw lots as to who would be thrown overboard, and the person who proposed the plan was somebody by exactly the same name, Richard Parker, and the lot fell out in his detriment, and he was the one who was killed, and then somebody by the same name, 50 years later or whatever, turned out to be the person who was killed and cannibalized in this particular case. But anyway, the next case that has some import is a case where there was no actual murder, but it was really more a question of who do you save first, and that was the case of the Titanic, which was not a court case. I don't believe that there were any court proceedings that followed the Titanic. That was in the early 20s. Century, where the boat, a big resort liner, Titanic, hit an iceberg, and as we all know the story, it went down. And there was no premise or question that anybody would be thrown overboard. There were limited spaces on the lifeboats, and the question was who would get to go on the lifeboats. And there, the precedence was given to people who were women. Generally, the women were given precedence over the men, and the passengers were given priority over the people who were the ship captains and the ship crew members. So there seemed to be a system that was more consistent with the law of the sea that was articulated by the court in the United States versus Holmes. But there too, the question that was raised was, if you were a person who was not a woman and you were not on the necessarily the priority list for triage, did a person have a right to just jump the boat and put themselves in one of the lifeboats in order to rescue themselves at the expense of others who might otherwise have come first? And halakhically, who would we put on the lifeboats first in those circumstances? There was a famous story there, a true story about one of the fellows who was a victim of the Titanic, who was a Jewish man by the name of Isidore Strauss, who was one of the co-founders and the co-owners of the Macy's department store. And Isidore Strauss was a man, and therefore he was not amongst those who were priority figures to be placed on the lifeboats. But his wife, Ida Strauss, did not want to go into the lifeboat unless Isidore went with her. And Isidore was a very, very wealthy man, and they were actually willing to allow Isidore to go onto the boat so that Ida, his wife, could be saved. And even though most men were not being allowed, they did allow Isidore to go on the lifeboat, and Isidore refused, because Isidore did not feel that it was right for him to go on the lifeboat and have all the other men perish. But then once Isidore refused to go on the lifeboat, Ida refused to go on the lifeboat as well, and therefore both Isidore and Ida perished as a result of this noble and heroic act, apparently on their part. And I am told that this is depicted in the movie version of Titanic, where apparently Isidore and Ida are unnamed, I suppose, are shown sitting in their room, in their cabin, in the boat, holding each other's hands as the water starts to gather around them. Apparently, there's such a scene. So I suppose that if the goal of Isidore was to create some sort of a Kiddush Hashem, so it was something that was still actually remembered many, many years later when the movie was made, although I'm not sure if they put like a yarmulke or a hat or, you know, something on his head to clearly identify him as somebody of the Jewish faith. Nonetheless, so these were, you know, some of the stories and some of the considerations. So let's think about the sources. So the first question about saving oneself. So this is really the Gemara in Bava Metzia. There's a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Ben Petua. There are two people who are walking on the road. One of them is holding a flask of water. Gemara and Baba Metzia Daf Samach Beis. If both of them drink the water, there's not going to be enough water for both of them, and they're going to die. But one of them, if one of them drinks all the water, he's going to survive, and he's going to make it to civilization, where he will be able to go on with his life. So here you have a machlokis, and we pass on like Rabbi Akiva. Ben Petura, Darash Ben Petura, Mutar Shishtu Shneim Yamusuf. Ben Petura says it's better for both of them to drink a little bit, even though they may die. Now, the way the Chazon Ish understands this, in his Kiddushim on Rabbi Chaim Alevi, Al-Haramam, the Chazon Ish understands that Ben Petura only articulated this position because they're both going to have at least Chayishah by drinking a little bit of water. They both live at least a couple more hours. Maybe relief and rescue will come along in a couple of hours. If Ben Petura would not have articulated his position, there would be no possibility of the two of them surviving, then he would agree with Rabbi Akiva, that we'll get to in a second. So it says Ben Petura, they both should drink Va'yurech, and Mehem Misaso Shechaveva, at Shabbat Rabbi Akiva, until Rabbi Akiva came along. V'limei v'cheach hicha imach, there's a pasuk that says that your fellow shall live with you, meaning you live first and then he lives afterwards. Chayecha kom l'chayechavecha, your life precedes the life of your fellow. So Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that in the event that there is, even though, you know, presumably we're talking about a case where maybe there's a possibility that both of them could live if they both drink the water, but nonetheless, if one of them drinks the water, the one who owns the water will drink the water, he will definitely survive. So then Rabbi Akiva says that that person should drink the water in order that he definitely survive, even though, as a result, somebody else will, the other fellow is going to die because of this principle of Chayecha Komim. Now, the Chazon Ish also points out that this principle of Rabbi Akiva only obtains if this is the person, if the person who's saving himself actually has the water. If he doesn't have the water, if you have a third party who has the water, and that third party has to decide how to distribute the water, so then the third party is supposed to do like Ben Petua and give a little bit of water to person number two and a little bit of water to person number three. Let's assume the person who's holding the water is already taken care of, but because then the principle of Chayecha Komin doesn't apply since the person doesn't actually have the water. But what we glean from this halacha is that if a person actually has access to a life-saving resource that's going to rescue him, even though it means that others are going to die, then there at least is a basis, based on the principle of Rabbi Akiva, that for the vis-a-vis the person himself, he has the right to avail himself of that resource or that opportunity, the life-saving opportunity, even though others are going to die. Now, this question came up a lot in the course of the Holocaust. A lot of heart-wrenching tshuvas in the course of the Holocaust where people were asking the rabban of the poskim of the various ghettos when they had an opportunity to save themselves, were they allowed to avail themselves of that opportunity even though others would die? If they were given an opportunity to go into some sort of a work group, if they went into the work group, so others would go into the death group, so could they take advantage of the opportunity to go into the work group? Could they take advantage of the opportunity to be saved even though only a limited number of people could be saved? So the answer generally that came back was that it's okay. The answer generally came back is that if the person himself has access to this life-saving opportunity, it's not a question of, you know, something where the two of the, you know, the Maharsha writes that if the flask of water belongs to two people, so then they have to follow Ben Petura. If the land belongs to two people, so then a person can't say Chayecha Komin because the other person has just as much access to the water as he does. But if for whatever reason this person has the step up, then the person could take advantage of the step up and save himself, even though somebody else is going to die. So one could argue that if the ship captains said to Isidore Strauss that he had that they were giving him the right to go onto the lifeboat, that he could have taken advantage of that opportunity to go onto the lifeboat based on this argument. If a person is essentially taking away from somebody else, then it becomes a much more vexing question. So one of the famous Holocaust Shilohs was with respect to somebody who whose son had already been targeted for death, and he had the opportunity to redeem him. So he was already in the death group. It wasn't a question of him being given the that everybody is essentially fighting for survival, and he has an escape route, and he'll take advantage of that escape route. We don't know if others will as well, but here the person was already with a death group, and if he would be redeemed from that death group, somebody else would necessarily be put into that death group. It would be Vadai sending somebody else to actual death. So in that particular case, the questioner who asked one of the poskim of who was in the camps as to whether he could redeem his son, even though it meant for sure that somebody else would be put into his son's place, so he didn't get a clear answer. It was kind of like the posek in question just sort of stared at him, as the story goes, and he took that as a sign that he did not have a right to redeem his son, and he just was mekabel besimcha, the decree of heaven, that his son would just have to perish. So these were some of these questions became kind of a little bit blurry and a little bit difficult. How do you define where it's just the question of chayecha komen, and how do you define where it's essentially that you're taking away from somebody else's life and putting them to death, where it's not a question of your being, that you're already having the flask of water. Here they didn't already have the flask of water. Here's a question, here's a case where the person actually was the reverse. They already have been targeted for death. So therefore, some of these questions became very halacha lemaisa, very pertinent, very vexing in the context of the Holocaust. But none of these sources justify actually saving your skin by pushing somebody else out. That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that if the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin Dalet, which talks about there was a person, somebody came up in a rabbi, the person who's in charge of the town, whatever, who's a mean-spirited bandit, said to me, Zil Kotle, the Polonia, go kill so-and-so, be lokat yatil nalach, and if you don't kill so-and-so, I'm going to kill you. So what do? Do I kill so-and-so to save my skin? Zachayecha komen. So the answer is no. Zachayecha komen if you're actually going to kill somebody. So I'm the katlucha v'lo tikto. This is Yereg Vayavo. You should be killed rather than kill the other guy. Who says that your blood is redder? Maybe the other fellow's blood is redder than your blood. So then the question becomes, okay, if this whole concept that when it comes to not murdering somebody to save your own skin is that the other person's blood might be just as red as your blood, and who says that your life is more valuable than somebody else's? We view all Jewish lives in this context as being of equal value. So what then if you could construe a situation where maybe you can objectively say that there's a red of blood on the other side? How is there red of blood on one side than the other side? Well, let's say that instead of one person being saved, a lot of people would be saved. That's the case that the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, based on the Tosefta and Trumos, where if I have a person who comes, I have some gangsters that come to town, some marauders, crusaders, whatever, and they say, go hand over somebody from the town, or else we're going to kill all of you. So the halakha is that you don't hand the person over. What if they designate somebody? They say, well, we're designating a specific person to hand over. So the Rambam paskins like Reish Lakish that we don't actually hand over a specific person. We don't hand over a specific person unless the person happens to be culpable of capital punishment anyway. That's the case in Shmuel, in Sefer Shmuel, where Yoav wanted Sheva ben Bichri, who had been a Moed B'Malkus, to be handed over so that the rest of the town not be killed. So then it was appropriate for the town to hand over Sheva ben Bichri because he was Chayav Misa. But if a person is not Chayav Misa, Sheva ben Bichri, in most of these situations, like in the Titanic or, in the various shipwreck cases, you're not going to have a person on the boat who's clearly Chayav Misa, Sheva ben Bichri, then you're not allowed to hand somebody over. So if you had, for example, a case where it would seem similarly that you had a boat that was going down and you could just throw somebody overboard to save somebody else. So it would seem, by extension, by the same argument, that you wouldn't be allowed to throw a person overboard, just like you're not allowed to hand somebody over. But the question is, why don't we say that the blood of a group of people is redder than the group of one person? So how is this consistent with the svara that's given in the Gemara as to why we don't allow one person to kill another in order to save his own skin? That's if I'm just dealing with one person versus another person. But what if it's one person versus a lot of other people? So the Kesef Mishnah asked this question, Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah in Perakei Halacha Hei, And he says it could be that the according to Reish Lakish we paskin like the Rambam paskins like that when it comes to shvikos damim it's just a svara of yereg bayavor that my chaz is the damim didach sumach tvei in a wicker a tam. Maybe that's not really the main reason. The Kabbalah is the yadam. It was just a Kabbalah when that we don't murder people. Period. The shvikos damim yereg bayavor. The shvikos damim is always a yereg. Just we came up with a reason for when the reason would be applicable. However, even if the reason is not applicable, even if the reason is not applicable, we still say Yereg Bel Yabor. Why? So the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer suggests that maybe the reason is as follows. That if you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, so the Gemara, this is in Simon Tes Zion, Sifkatan Hay. This is where you'll find this particular insight of the Achiezer. So he says, if you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara derives the din of Yereg Bel Yabor with respect that you cause death rather than for the crime to be committed. You cause the perpetrator to die rather than for the crime to be committed. From the case of Nara Hamurasa, we have a hekesh kikashir yakum isha reyeu ratzacho nefesh kena devar azeh. That in the parsha Nara Murasa, where it talks about how you can save the betrothed maiden who's being chased by a rapist, by a would-be rapist, that you're allowed to kill the would-be rapist. So the pasuk says you can do that because it's just like Ritzicha. So we derive from there that with respect to Ritzicha as well, that you can kill the would-be murderer rather than allow him to commit the act of murder. And so too you yourself should not commit the act of murder, but should allow yourself to be murdered as well. So the Achiezer says that since ultimately we make a hekesh between the case of Rotzeach and the case of Nara Amurasa, we learn that you can kill a Rodeh from Nara Amurasa, we learn Yereg Bel Yabor from Rotzeach, but since it's connected to Nara Hamurasa, so since the Svara, my chazis, the Dhamma Didach Sumak Tvei, is not applicable to Nara Hamurasa, that's not a case of somebody being killed, so it's not a Svara, my chazis. So therefore, once we've made the Hekesh, the Svara of my chazis falls by the wayside, and we just say that just like the universe of cases where a person could kill a Rodeh, and Nara Hamurasa does not depend upon this svara, so to the universe of cases where we would say Yereg Bel Yabor in the circumstance of Ritzicha also would not depend upon this svara. So therefore, we do not ultimately allow for the designation of a person for murder, even if a lot of other people are going to be saved as a result. But Rav Avaya Yosef quotes a very interesting tshuva in Chelek Bav of the Yabia Omer in Chelek Hoshemishpat Simen Dalet. Rav Avaya Yosef talks about the question of whether you're ever allowed to rely upon a lottery. Can you rely upon a lottery for purposes of designating somebody for death, for example, in something like a shipwreck case? So so he quotes from the Tiferes Lemoshe, who says that even though, generally speaking, when it comes to a group of people who are living in a city, and then there are gangsters who say, give us one of you, or we're going to kill all of you, that you're not allowed to hand somebody over, V'nir Ali, nonetheless, he says, to be called makom, mutter limsor lahem echa, you are allowed to give one person over, apigoral shiatilu benem kemaisa yona navi, that you can, you're not allowed to just pick somebody at your own whim. You're not allowed to designate somebody whom they are specifically identifying if he's not Chayav Misa Kesheva Ben Bichri, but you can draw a lottery in order to turn somebody over. And he says, how do I know that this is okay? From the shipwreck case that is described in Tanakh of Yonah Hanavi. Because in the case of Yonah Hanavi, the ship was tossing and turning at sea, And it says in Perek Aleph of Sefer Yonah that the sailors turned to each other, V'yomu isha reyeh l'chu v'napila goralos, let us draw lots, v'neidah v'shalmiya ra'ah hazos, so we'll know who is the cause of this tempest. L'anu v'yapila goralos, v'yipola goral yonah, and the goral, the lottery fell out on Yonah. And then eventually they had a conversation with Yonah. He admitted that, yes, it is all my fault because I'm running away from God. And the Medrash says that they really took tremendous, tremendous steps to not have to throw him overboard. They just kind of put him out on the ship and had the water go up to his ankles and up to his thighs. And every single time the waters calmed, and then they would bring him back into the ship, but then there would be a tempest again. So eventually they realized the only way they're going to rescue themselves is by throwing him out entirely, but they felt really, really bad about it. Nonetheless, despite the fact that they felt really, really bad about it, so we're told that by Yusu es Yonah, they took Yonah by Yitzilu Elayam, they threw him into the sea, V'yamanam Hayam Izapo, and then the water calmed down and everybody was saved. So he says, we see from the precedent of Yonah that this is something which is perfectly fine. So if you have a shipwreck case, or even if you have not a shipwreck case, but just people want to, somebody hand it over in order not to kill the entire city, so then he says, you can draw lots, no problem. So Rabbi Banya Yosef doesn't like this. He says that, in fact, the lots are considered to be, at best, an asmachta. Even for Dine Mamonus, they would not be dispositive to decide monetary cases. And for sure, you cannot use lots when it comes to Dine Nefashos. And the case of Yonah is a terrible example because, number one, they weren't Jewish, so we can't derive halakha from the way these sailors conducted themselves. Number two, it was clear that this was Minas Shemayim because the sea was completely calm with respect to everybody else. It was only raging with respect to this boat, so clearly something supernatural was going on over here. And number three, they tried, Yonah himself admitted that it was all his fault. And number four, they tried as hard as they possibly could with great prayer and so forth to rescue him. And they didn't just nonchalantly and cavalierly throw him overboard. They really had tremendous trepidation from doing such a thing. So therefore, he says, for all of these reasons, we cannot derive from the story of Yonah that it would ever be permissible to cause somebody's murder in order to save everybody else by utilizing the lottery system. So even though the court, the United States court, actually would agree, it seems, in some measure with the Feres Lemoshe, because the United States court, the United States versus Holmes, said, why don't you draw lotteries? That's like the logical way to proceed, is to draw lotteries. Nonetheless, Ravaya Yosef disagrees with the Feres Lemoshe, saying that lotteries would not be appropriate. However, there is a Sefer Hasidim that does talk about this specifically in the shipwreck context, and Ravaya Yosef quotes from the Sefer Hasidim. So the Sefer Hasidim says very explicitly, says, B'nei Adam Shehayu B'Sfina, if you have people who are in a boat, this is in Siman Tav Shin Aleph of the Sefer Hasidim, V'haya Ruach Sa'ara Bayam, there was a raging tempest in the water, Eina Mashayim L'Hapil Gorolos, you're not allowed to draw a lot, Shem Yipol Echad Mehem Yitilu, to designate who should be thrown overboard, El Yam, Kasher Asu L'Yona Ben Amitai, Ein Lassos Kain, you're not allowed to do that. And the Hashda Smachta Lokanya Filinyan Mamos, he says, like Ravaya Yosef, just like in a Smachta, then a Smachta doesn't work even for Mamonis, Koshkaninyan Nefasha Shlo Yismuku Al Hagoro, and all of the cases of lotteries that you find in the Torah, all were done with Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore we cannot derive anything from there. However, there is another paragraph in the Sefer Hasidim. The good thing about the Sefer Hasidim is that it has lots and lots of paragraphs, and therefore anything that you're looking for, you can eventually find. So there's another siman in the Sefer Hasidim. It says exactly the opposite. That's in Tuf Resh Ayin Tes. Now, it's a little bit earlier, so you could say that it's superseded by Tuf Shin Aleph, right? But that's what it says here. B'nei Adam She'ovim Misfina, if you have people who are on a boat, B'lev Yom, in the heart of the sea, B'amdalem Moch Sa'ar, L'shpor Sfina La'piyah, and they hit an iceberg or they have a terrible tempest, Usharas Venus Ovros Bisholom, and the other boats are all passing peaceably, Biadua Shiesh Bisfina Mishikhaev Shaim Lahapil Gorolos. So then you know that somebody in the boat is Chayev, and you're allowed to draw lots. Well, Mishi Pola Goro, Gimel Pa'am Zecharzen, if the lot falls on the same person three times in a row, Vashaim Lahapilo Layam, you're allowed to toss him out into the raging sea. Umispalim Lashem Shalipol Zakel El Alachayev, and for good measure, you should just pray that the lot falls on the right person. But this would be something which is perfectly acceptable. So the Knesset HaGedolah brings the two different paragraphs. And he says, He brings the paragraph of the Sefer Chasidim where he says it's okay to draw lots, and he says, Shavkei Arav LaChasiduse. That in that particular paragraph where he said you could throw somebody overboard, he left his Chasidus, and therefore I guess we can excise that paragraph from the Sefer Chasidim, that this he thinks is in fact the wrong result. But there might be a way to reconcile these two paragraphs. Yes. Correct. So Rav Yaakov Emden and others say that you can reconcile the two paragraphs. The first paragraph that says that you can't throw anybody overboard is talking about just a regular, normal case where everything is functioning out piteva. I have a boat that hits an iceberg, and in the normal course, it's going to go down, and maybe you can save the boat if you throw someone overboard, or maybe there's a lifeboat where there's just it's too crowded and you're going to have to throw somebody overboard or else it's going to sink. So then I understand that you're not allowed to pick somebody to throw them overboard because that would be in violation of the fact that we paskin that you're never allowed to murder even to save a large number of people. However, the second paragraph, or the earlier paragraph of the Sefer HaChasidim, is talking about a case where it's clearly supernatural, where all around you everything is peaceful and everything is nice and there's no storm at sea and the river is calm, and only in this particular point is there a raging storm right around the boat where clearly there's something that's very fishy which is going on. So only in that particular case where it's clear that there's some supernatural intervention would it be appropriate to draw a lot. So he does suggest this distinction, and he rejects it. He rejects the distinction because ultimately we can't derive from the case of Yonah because it's not halacha lemaisa, and bottom line, you still are murdering somebody, and bottom line, it still isn't a smachta to rely upon a lottery at all. And we don't have Ruach HaKodesh that's screaming out at us from heaven. Like, for example, when they did the lottery of the Chalukah Sa'aretz, where the Urim Mitumim would affirm every single choice of the Goral and would actually speak loudly and say the Goral of this land is going to this Shevet, so that together with the lottery, there was a very clear, manifest presence of Ruach HaKodesh. So since we don't have that, so we can't paskin like that. But even if we did paskin, like the distinction of Yaakov Emden, I would imagine that it's almost like a Dovah Shalom Bali Olam, that it's not going to happen in the cases that occur at sea, or otherwise you're not going to have this clear supernatural situation where everything else is calm and everything else is hunky-dory, and only here in one spot of the sea is there some sort of a raging storm which is completely inconsistent with everything going on around it. So therefore, even if you did accept that distinction, which halakha l'maisa we don't, it would not be practical to ever be justified to draw lotteries to throw somebody overboard. So therefore, from a halakhic perspective, Holmes was wrong and the court was wrong. Holmes was wrong in terms of making his own determination of who to throw overboard. And for that matter, Dudley and Stevens were wrong for killing Parker and eating him. But in addition, the court itself would be wrong from the standpoint of halakha in endorsing a system where lotteries would be drawn in order to make a determination of who to throw overboard. It would seem that halakhically you would not be allowed to throw anybody overboard under those circumstances. But then that brings us to kind of the last part of the analysis. And the last part of the analysis is, well, is there some sort of a triage system in terms of who you place into the lifeboat? So here we have the question as to whether there is some sort of a halacha lemaise type of a triage which is found in the Mishnah and Gemara in Horios. The Mishnah in Horios says that ish kodem liisha lahachios, that when it comes to causing somebody to be sustained, a man comes before a woman. And then it goes on and gives other priority systems of triage, the Koda Kohen, Kodem Lelevi, Levi Yisrael, Yisrael Lamamzer, that's Bisman Shekul and Shoven, Aval Nahaya Mamzer Tamachachem, the Kohen Gadol Amma Aretz, Mamzer Tamachachem is Kodem, the Kohen Gadol Amma Aretz. Do these systems of triage have anything to do with saving lives? So it happens the Rambam doesn't codify this system of triage at all. There is an apparently conflicting Gemara in Ksuvos on Daf Samach Zayin. There's a Braisa that's born in Ksuvos on Daf Samach Zayin where the Braisa says, wait, I have a Gemara right here so I can read it to you. So the Braisa there says that rather than the man coming before the woman actually comes before the man. And what is the context that's being spoken about over there? So over there, Over there, the Gemara says that if I have, for example, limited clothing resources that I'm going to give out, so I give to so I give to a woman rather than giving to a man first. And if it's a question of getting certain resources, being able to have the allocation of certain resources, so the reason why a woman comes before the man is because derech isha lakso al apsa derech ish lakso al apsachim ve'ein derech isha lakzor al al apsachim. Here's the Gemara Samach Zayin and Aleph at the bottom. Yosom yosoma shibali sparnes mepanasin es a yosoma ve'chakak mepanasin es a yosom mepneisha ish darko lakso al apsachim ve'ein isha darko lakzor. That I have a man go and look for his nourishment because it's more befitting for a man to go knocking, be a mashulach, to knock door to door, but it's not as befitting for a woman to go knocking door to door. So this is codified in Hilchos Matnos Aniyim. The Rambam has this codification, but not anything about Lahachios and Horios. So I could say that it's simply a Machlokas Hasugios, that Horios has nothing is talking about if a person is in dire straits and needs to have some nourishment, needs to have some parnasa, and as is Ksuvos, and we paskin like Ksuvos, and we don't paskin like Horios, but it's not necessarily even talking about saving a person who's drowning at sea. However, the Beis Yosef in Yeridea says that it's talking, in fact, about somebody who's drowning at sea. And the reconciliation between the Gemara and Ksuvos and the Mishnah in Horios is that the Gemara and Ksuvos is talking about somebody who's not dying, but just somebody who needs a parnasa. So we say let the man go from door to door and feed the woman directly. While the Mishnah in Horios is talking about saving somebody's life. When it comes to saving somebody's life, so then the man is rescued before the woman. When it comes to saving his life, why does the man come before the woman? So the Rambam in his Perush Mishnayos explains it's more kedusha. That's a question. La halacha. But Moshe Feinstein writes that man and woman have exactly the same kedusha. But the Rambam means to say that well, the man has more mitzvos, so whenever there's more and more mitzvos, it's more kedusha. So therefore, the man comes first. And that's understood by the Beis Yosef as dealing with a situation where they're both say drowning in the water, and you have to figure out which one you're going to save. So it would seem, according to that, that if you would have a system of triage, that the Mishnah in Horios actually gives you some sort of a halakhic direction that there is a priority system in terms of whom we save if we can only save one individual. But is that actually brought down the halakha? So the Beis Yosef does not bring it down in the Shulchan Aruch itself. But the Ramah says something which is rather curious. This is in Shulchan Aruch. One second. I believe Reish Mem Beis. Hold on. No, that's not it. Reish. Okay. No, it's in Yeridea. Actually, it's in Yeridea. The halakha is brought in Yeridea, and it's in Reish Nun Beis. Reish Nun Beis in Yeridea. The Ramah says the following. This is the siman that's dealing with Pidyon Shvuyim. So it's almost like an aside. It's very, very interesting. He says like this. Hold on. The Machabah says, "Podem Aisha Kodem Aisha." That this is also consistent with an notion of Mefarnesin Aisha Bifnei Aish. V'Megilah Mishka Zaka Podem Aisha Kodem. But in the event that the man is going to be violated in an unnatural fashion through Mishkav Zaka, so then he's redeemed first. So says the Ramah, "V'im Shneim Rotzim Lidvoa Benar." If both of them want to drown in the river, it's a strange lashon. Both of them want to drown in the river. Hatzolas Aish Kodem. So then you save the man first. So what do you mean they both want to drown in the river? So the Taz says, "Pirush Ishvi Shehem B'Sakanas Tfia," that they're both drowning in the river. Benar, it's like you would say, I want Rotzim. It's just a figure of speech over here. The Nilman Mishnah Sof Horios Ish Konal Isha L'Achiyoso. That's what we derive from the Mishnah Horios. The man comes first. Memela L'Kol Sakanas Shemisa.
Whenever there's a sakana shel misa, so you got to save the man before you save the woman. But nearly a time she ishkayot feber mitzvos. And he says, like is indicated in the parish of Mishnayos of the Rambam, because the man has more mitzvos that he's chayav to perform than the woman. And presumably that would apply to the precedence of a kohen over a levi as well, and so forth and so forth. Not only does the Taz say that, but the Shach says that in Siman Reish Nun Aleph, the previous Siman, because the previous Siman is where the Shulchan Aruch codifies the halacha that you feed a woman, a destitute woman, before you feed a destitute man. And he says, what do I do with the precedence? In the Hachiyoso and the Mishnah in Horiyos, so he says, "V'had the Tanah Mesof Horiyos that a Ish Kodem LeIsha LaHachiyos LaHashiv Abeda VeIsha Kodemus LeIsha LeKsus." The woman only comes first when it comes to clothing, but not when it comes to food. Sarach Lomad LaHachiyos. No, LaHachiyos there doesn't mean food. Food, the woman comes first, just like she comes first with respect to clothing. But LaHachiyos there means Haina LaHatzila Mimem Tovim Minar. It means the order of precedence and rescue if the boat is sinking, the boat drowning in the river. Ukahai gavna, and with respect to other such things, valachila, but just giving them food, labachlalahakiyasu. That's not saving a person's life. That's aladina dinaksus. That's just to give food and clothing for people who are not about to die. They're about to die, so then the man gets rescued before the woman. So he paskins that way, lahalacha. However, it doesn't appear clear that everybody necessarily understands that this is halacha lemaise, and in fact. There is there's the Shita of the Levush. The Levush says that if you look very, and the Levush was a Talmud of the Ramah, so this is a pretty authentic source. So the Levush says, what do you mean, Aish v'isha sherotzim, shneim rotzim litboa benar? There's an essay on this by Rav Yechiel Goldhaber, who has lectured in our yeshiva. He's an expert in minhagim, and he took an interest in this particular sugya. So the way he puts it is very nice. He says, L'chayre dvar muzar miyoter, the words of the Ramah seem very strange. Mi rotzeh litboa benar, who wants to drown in the river? So he says, in fact, if you look at the Levush says explicitly, we are talking about Anish and Isha who want to drown in the river. Because the context is the context of where they've been taken captive, namely the case that the Mechaber talks about. And the context is that the woman is going to be violated through prostitution. And the man is going to be violated through Mishkav Zachar, and therefore they both jump into the river because they both want to drown themselves, or they both want to jump into the river to drown themselves. And the question is, they're not actually in the river necessarily, but they want to jump into the river because they want to rescue themselves from having to be violated. And the question is, which one under those circumstances do you have a mitzvah to redeem first? And the halakha is, you have the mitzvah to redeem the man before the woman for the same reason the Machaber said, because of the fact that this is unnatural, because he's going to have a greater tsar, because he's going to be forced into Mishkav Zachar, which is a more unnatural act than what's going to be done to the woman. And it's simply a recordation of priority with respect to Pinyon Shvuyim, and has nothing to do with Hatzolas Nefashos. And in fact, if you look in other Rishonim give other reconciliations between the Mishnah in Horios and the Mishnah and the Brisa in Ksuvos, where they also understand the Mishnah in Horios is not talking about saving lives at all. The Tzitz Eliezer at the beginning of Chelet Yurches also has a summary of all of the sources on this particular point. And many say that the distinction is that if it's a question of Lachso al Psachim, where the man has the ability to go door to door, so then the woman comes first in terms of just providing food. And if it's not, there's no ability to be Lachso al Psachim because there's nobody to ask food from, so then in that particular case, we would say that the man goes first. But neither of the Gemaras is talking about a case of Hatzolas Nefashos. There we don't have any particular priority system. So how do we paskin actually halakha l'maaseh? Because this also would play out not only in terms of the shipwreck cases of deciding who Mr. Holmes or anybody else is going to put on the lifeboat first, and whether Isidore Strauss comes first or whether Ida Strauss comes first, but this also is a relevant question with respect to medical issues of the allocation of scarce life-saving medical resources. Who gets, if there's only one liver to give out and a number of people who are waiting for it, so who gets it first? Is there a priority system with respect to a doctor who only has the ability to treat one person and everybody else is going to die? So Rav Moshe Feinstein interestingly writes about this in Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Beis, Siman Ayin Hei, and he says as follows. he says that as a general principle, all of the priorities that we might have with respect to who comes before somebody else is only if all else is equal. But if, for example, one person comes to the doctor first, or one person presents himself to the hospital first, so then the triage system that we would have would be first come, first serve. So I have one person who is, for example, the closest to the lifeboat. So you don't turn that person away in order to go down into the deeper recesses of the cabins in order to save somebody else. You would take the person who's there. So he says the first point is that you look to Tzarech HaRofe Leilach Lemi Shenikra Techila. The first priority system of triage is first come, first serve. And then the next consideration is Lemisha Kavala Besa Yoter. Who can he get to first? If you have two people who are drowning in the sea, and one of them is very close and one of them is far away, so then you go to the person who's the closest before you go to the one who is far away. Ukashishavin, but what if they're exactly identical? So do I reject entirely the premise that the Mishnah in Horios has anything to say with the order of saving lives? Or do I ultimately accept that premise when all else is equal? So says Rav Moshe, I'm not making it up, I'm just reading. If all else is equal, if they both have come at the same time, they're both equally close, you also presumably would take into account which person are you going to be more likely to save? The person, if one person, you'll perform an operation and they're likely to die, and the other person is more likely to be saved. So that person on some level is Karav Yotzeh for that reason, so he mentions that as well. But otherwise, if they both came the same time, if they're both equally close and they're both equally capable of being saved, if you have an exact science identification of the individuals, so then the only differentiation would be the Mishnah in Horios. Now, elsewhere, he writes that whenever you're going to apply the Mishnah in Horios, it's going to require a tremendous amount of what he refers to as Iyun Rav. He says, "V'af be'elu kashel asos ma'aseh below Iyun Gadol." You're going to have to do an Iyun Gadol. Why an Iyun Gadol? So Tzitz Eliezer suggests that maybe you might have to do an Iyun Gadol for the following reason. You know, the Rambam said, why is it that the man might take precedence over the woman, however we understand whether it's talking about life or something else, because the greater Kedusha, because he has more mitzvah. So he says, well, then I have to examine their religious credentials. Does this man, in fact, do more mitzvahs? If this man is doing less mitzvahs and the woman is doing more mitzvahs, so in that particular case, she would take precedence. It's kind of like the line of Mamzer, Tam Chokon Kodim Lekoyen Gadol Am Haaretz. So you can't just automatically apply the Mishnah without perhaps taking all of those considerations into account as well. Rav Moshe doesn't spell it out, but maybe that's what he means when he says that all of that would have to be done with Iyun Gadol. Of Shlomo Zalman Orbach also says that in theory, maybe we could apply the priority system of the Mishnah in Horios, but in practice, it's actually something which is essentially Bizmanenu Kashim Odlis Noig Lefizeh. It's practically very difficult to actually implement in practice. However, in terms of whether, at least on a theoretical basis, the Mishnah in Horios is considered to be applicable halakha l'maisa, so Rav Moshe says that it is. However, the next line of Rav Moshe is going to absolutely astound you. So the next line of Rav Moshe says as follows. Now remember, we rejected the whole Yonah paradigm in the context of throwing people overboard. Tiferes l'Moshe and Sefer Chasidim notwithstanding. But says Rav Moshe, if it's a question of Kedima, in terms of who you're going to save, and everything else is equal, and even the order system of the Mishnah in Horios ends up being completely equal in terms of the people you have in front of you, what do you do? Vim lo yadua zeh leharofe, if you're not able to determine it by any of the other criteria, yiye goral, then you should use the goral, then you got to use the lottery system. So the lottery system actually survives. into the contemporary realms of halacha lemaisa, at least according to Rav Moshe, that if you have some sort of a life-saving triage decision to make, and you don't have any advantage for either party based on first come, first serve, based on being closest, based on being more most likely to benefit from the life-saving intervention, based on the priorities in the mission in Horios, so then and only then do you actually go to the Goral system. So I just wanted to conclude with a very fascinating story that kind of highlights, you know, all of these tensions that's brought by Rabbi Goldhaber in his essay. And this had to do with a maisa, famous maisa, which is so famous that there are about 200 different versions of it, but I'll tell you the version that's the most entertaining. So this is the a maisa of Rabbi Yishaya ben Rabbi Yisachar Dov Barodki, who was apparently a secretary of Moses Montefiore. He lived in the mid-1800s, and he was traveling, because of his fierce religious Zionism, he was traveling to Eretz Yisrael with his two small children. One was Shmuel Akiva, and one was his daughter, Chaya Gruna. And as they got close to the port in Haifa, there was a terrible storm, and the ship fell apart. And he was together with a bunch of Arabs, apparently who were accompanying him on the trip, and the Arabs were strong and capable of swimming all the way from where the ship broke down to the shore in Haifa. They were maybe a mile away or something like that. He was remarkably agile, considering, you know, his Jewish credentials, and was initially able to swim to shore. But the only problem is that he had two little children, and the two little children were not able to swim, and they were hanging on to him. And he was swimming for dear life and trying his best to get everybody to the shore. But at a certain point, he realized that he's just not going to be able to make it, certainly not with the two children hanging on to him. He's only going to be able to do it with one kid. And he's trying to figure out, what can he do? He's not going to be able to rescue both of the kids. He can only rescue one of the kids. So how does he go about such a cheshbon? And then he remembered the Mishnah in Horios, so he turned to his kids and he said, you know, this is a terrible, terrible situation, and I really would prefer that we all be saved, but I just don't have the strength, I can't do it. And he's crying, and it's this heart-wrenching scene, but he said, the Mishnah says that Ish Kodem L'Ish L'Achayos, that the boy has to come before the girl. So he apologized to Chaya Gruna, and he said he's not just not going to be able to continue with her. But Chaya Gruna wouldn't let go. And Chaya Gruna just redoubled her efforts to clasp her father's neck. And she said, I am sorry, but, you know, it could be that with respect to yourself, you have the Mishnah in Horios that says, Ish Kodem L'Ish L'Achayos, but with respect to myself, I have the Gemara, the Chayecha Kodmin, and I have to watch out for my life, and I have to, therefore, make sure that my priority is to rescue my own skin, so I'm not letting go of you. So he turned up the Shemayim, and he cried out to Kodesh Baruch Hu, please look at this dire situation, I don't know what to do, please give me the strength that I'll be able to make it to shore. And miraculously enough, he made it to shore. I don't know the dynamics of his relationship with his daughter afterwards, but we're told by the historical account that she built the daughter and the son as well. They both built beautiful, beautiful families in Eretz Yisrael. They were married with the Gedolei Olam who lived there, Ada Yom Hazeh. This was sort of a heartwarming result where, in the end, it all worked out for the best for everybody. So, Im Yetz Hashem, we should all be zoche that in any such situations that we should merit to also be able to save everybody.